Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and I'm very happy now to welcome to our studio Armando Iannucci, the man behind some of the best political satire of our day, to be sure. And if you don't know his name, you likely know at least some of his work, starting with creating characters like Alan Partridge and shows like The Thick of It in his native England. The Thick of It was turned into the movie In the Loop, a fictitious account of two bumbling administrations, the UK and the US, trying to come up with a pretext for military action in the Middle East. Okay, maybe it was not that fictitious. And Iannucci's latest project, the HBO series Veep, which is in the middle of its third season now, airing Sundays at 10:30 p.m., is also available through your ex-roommate's HBO Go account. Armando Iannucci, so great to have you here. Welcome to WNYC.
I'm not sure I can endorse the doing of HBO out of its money. But
but you attended the White House Correspondents' Dinner, so we'll get to that.
Yeah.
But I really want to start by congratulating you on Veep, which recently got renewed for a fourth season. And I guess job security in television is a little different from at least American politics, where you can become a congressman and then have your district gerrymandered so you don't have to worry about your job for the next 30 years.
Yeah, the other thing I've noticed about D.C. is even if you're out of power, if your administration isn't in the, even if you leave the administration in disgrace, if you resign, you still stay in D.C. and become quite a considerable player. It's a whole industry there.
More and more. I was just reading a stat about the rate of members of Congress who go home after they finish their terms for whatever reason, compared to those who actually stay and become professional lobbyists.
Yes.
And the rate has skyrocketed compared to what it used to be.
Yes. And the other thing, of course, is because the Obama administration doesn't allow lobbyists in the White House and doesn't and I think there's a rule now that if anyone leaves the West Wing, there has to be at least 2 years before they become a lobbyist. So all that happens is people leave 2 years earlier than they planned so that they can start making that money on target.
I think that happens. Let's take a listen to a bit from Veep. This is from the first episode of the first season. Vice President Selina Myers is in a meeting with a senator, but then gets news that one of her staffers has messed up. So we pick this clip up when she leaves her office, closes the door behind her, and chews out her assistant.
What the f***, Amy? I am putting out two fires in there, and I turn around to find out that you have set fire to the fire truck? The level of incompetence in this office is staggering.
We are going to get the card back and replace it with a new one.
Yeah, that's right. Simple. You're going to get on it. You are going to shut this the down, okay? Because I am busy in there apologizing to that. God! Okay. Mr. Burton, I'm so sorry. We're having a complicated day here.
So Julia Louis-Dreyfus as Vice President Selina Myers and her chief of staff, and that's funny on its own, but what the listeners don't know unless they knew the episode, I guess we can't call it a spoiler if it aired in the first episode of season one, but I'd say the reveal is that the stakes aren't that high for how upset she is. What's the assistant or the chief of staff getting chewed out over?
All she's done was a senator has died and there's a condolence card doing the rounds and someone has brought it for the vice president to sign. And the chief of staff says she's very busy. I'll sign it with her. I'll forge her signature. But she herself is so busy that she doesn't look at what she's doing. And instead of signing Selina's name, she signs her own name. So it looks now that the widow of this dead senator has been demeaned by the fact that the chief of staff has signed the card instead of the vice president. And it really the reason they're getting so uptight is that Washington is so wound up by the whole status anxiety. You know, I'm sure at the funeral they had of this dead senator, there was a whole round of calls made as to who was going to speak and who wasn't. I'm told if people are invited to Christmas parties at the White House, they'll say, are we going to the 5:30 or the 8 o'clock one? Because the 8 o'clock one is the one you want to be in, not the 5:30. You know, things like that. There's such a kind of level of obsession about where they come in the pecking order.
It sounds like Mark Leibovich's book, This Town, the subtitle of which included two parties and a funeral. And
yeah.
Regarding Tim Russert's funeral, it was partly about exactly that kind of thing.
And yeah, in the first episode of the current season of Veep, she attends a congressman's funeral. She wasn't invited, but she drops by. And they bump an ex-presidential candidate who was going to do the eulogy for her, since she's a sitting vice president. And he just gets to read out a children's poem instead. So, and that's based on that kind of paranoia about where you are, what your ranking is.
So thinking about this in the context of your work, your series The Thick of It was about the Minister of Department of Social Affairs and Citizenship, a sort of mid-level cabinet position. In the Loop is about the Minister for International Development getting in over his head.
Yeah.
And Veep is about the Vice President, not the President.
Mm.
Many people write political fiction so they get to put words in the mouths of the most powerful people in the world. Is there a reason that you tend to write about people lower down on the food chain?
Only in that I want to know what really goes on. And I want the audience to know what really goes on. And in any of these large buildings in Washington, these grand, you know, there are hundreds of people in there. So there isn't one person making all the decisions. That's the great sort of hidden trick with power, really, is that it looks like one person is in charge when there is, in fact, 500 people in charge. And they're all extremely busy. So no one really has much time to decide things. And that's what I want to show. I want to show how all the underlings actually have just as much influence or do as much damage as anyone higher up.
And we could think of your show in a way as an inverse of West Wing. Because there, everything was spun to epic proportions. I think your shows tend to be sort of the opposite, with an incessant focus on the petty things. Are you going for that on purpose?
Well, it's also to do with the fact that no matter how principled you are and no matter how idealistic you are, you have to come to terms with the situation you're in, the process, the grind that you have to get through on a daily basis to get anything done. And also the fact that events aren't things that you can schedule or that you can predict. And once that happens, you start finding little corners of your principles being rounded off and little edges of your high ideals being rubbed smooth. And really what I want to show is how no matter how good your intentions are, you're going to be put in a situation where you will inevitably have to compromise and how those compromises come about.
Would you say that in that context, your work is more cynical than West Wing, which I think showed all of what you just described, but in the context of people really trying to do good?
Yes.
And I'm not sure we see that so much in your stuff.
No, although I would say that The person I think you have sympathy for is the elected politician, is the vice president, because she does start each episode with quite a firm set of resolutions, and then they are just frustrated or hampered by the people she has around her and the 24-hour media, who will then seize on any little slight infelicity and magnify it, or the fact that the electorate themselves now expect our politicians to be absolutely perfect, not to have any little faults, to be able to answer any question perfectly and have a perfectly rounded opinion at any time of day or night.
Did you like West Wing? Were you influenced by it? Were you reacting against it with Veep?
No, I loved West Wing. I loved it. For me, it felt very authentic. It felt like an eye opener into how life goes on in DC. I also loved it for the language, for the the audacity in having such great literary style applied to mainstream drama. So, and the, obviously the performances as well, the cast were fantastic. So I was inspired by West Wing. But of course, you don't want to do the thing that you've just seen done, you know, if you, if you're making something. So, I wanted to do something different. I thought, okay, that's a very idealized, hopeful, optimistic vision of Washington. I think now, 10, 15 years on, there is much more, from the public, there's a much more sense of disconnection with politicians and from Washington.
Right. That was of its time, and this is of your time.
There's a frustration. There's a feeling that they're all talking about one thing, but it's not the thing that we want to talk about. If you look at how there was a swelling of popular opinion about reform and gun control and how that went away, how, in fact, actually, if you ask people, what are your real concerns? It's not really Obamacare. It's the economy. It's jobs. But, you know, the airwaves are full of, you know, still discussions about it. And I think it's that sense of not being invited to the party anymore, that they were no longer part of that conversation.
Satire about a very serious situation of disenfranchisement as people are feeling it around the land. Armando Iannucci, our guest, you know his work from The Thick of It, In the Loop, Veep, Alan Partridge. Can you talk a little bit about how you portray the media landscape in your work? Because I think there are lots of times in your shows when reporters are sort of the most no-nonsense people around. And yet, in this season of Veep, for instance, there's that send-up of the sort of D.C. inside the Beltway gossip blogger. Yeah. So how culpable are the media in the silliness you try to represent, and how much do you actually admire what goes on in real political journalism?
And well, my great frustration is because journalists themselves, and I've been a journalist myself, so I'm very much aware of it, because they're under pressure now to keep the blogs going, to update their web entries every hour, to come up with content continually, we're beginning to lose that ability to stand back and do the much more long-term assessment to ask bigger questions, to say, why is this happening? How have we reached this situation? Is gridlock going to get worse? It's we have to respond to the day and to the minute. And therefore, it seems bizarre to say, no, I want to do something about the last 5 years. That's my frustration.
Do you think this is worse in the United States than in the UK where you live? Because, you know, I could take calls all day from people who say, oh, if only we lived in England where they have the BBC and they have The Guardian. Or is it really the same?
Well, you talk to a BBC journalist or, a Guardian journalist who suddenly has to haul a video camera around with him or herself wherever they go and have to make 3 video pieces as well as 2 blog entries that are updated and file a report. And I think what I've noticed in America, obviously it's a bigger audience. You know, it's a huge population. So the media is much more widespread. And making a show, Veep is my first TV show in America, and I was amazed by the level of commentary you get the next day on all these highly regarded websites.
Uh-huh.
Whole essays about analyzing each episode. I don't know how these people find the time or earn their money, but it's an industry that we don't have in the UK.
That didn't happen over there with The Thick of It or whatever?
Occasionally, maybe a newspaper review, but not to the level, not to the extent here where it's like it's a sort of noise. It's more than a chatter. It's a sort of.
And do you think that's just the size of our country, or is it different culture?
Well, it's both, but I think the size. You forget, or one forgets when you come over to America, how big the audience is and the potential is, and therefore, actually, everything is magnified. So,
you attended the White House Correspondents' Dinner the other night. Was that your first time?
That was the first time, yeah.
How did that scene strike you? Because our listeners know we did a segment on Monday just after it with Bob Garfield from On the Media and Mark Leibovich from The Times, whose book, his takedown of Washington, I mentioned before, and they held this mock media ethics colloquy simultaneously to the dinner in the same hotel. And, of course, nobody showed up, which was the point that they wanted to make. But they think the whole thing shows journalists cavorting too cozily with the politicians they're supposed to
well,
be covering.
Well, it's extraordinary. I'd been warned well in advance what would happen when we attended, given that Veep is, you know, watched avidly in D.C. And it was, you know, I was all right because I'm off camera, but the cast were, you know, they were hugely enjoying it. But I did watch them being moved physically by the politicals there who felt that they were their property. And were being, you know, I'd be talking to, you know, Reed Scott, who plays Dan in Veep, and he'd suddenly be yanked away from me by some guy who he'd never met before, who's taking a selfie with him, and then shoved back. You know,
by a politician,
yeah, or a staffer, or a you uh-huh. know, but I'd been warned about that. There is in Washington an obsession with. Anyone from show business who's come to portray them, I think they get quite excited by that. When we were very first shown around the West Wing, as we were making Veep, I just wanted to have a look around just to get a sense of the size of it and the look
real
of it.
West Wing, the real West White Wing, House,
which is much smaller and more of a warren of small rooms and corridors than you get in the TV show The West Wing. But the person showing me around showed me into the Roosevelt Room, and he'd say, "This is Roosevelt Room. This would be where CJ would meet with Josh." You know, he was referencing TV West Wing characters, and I'm thinking, "But you're real. You don't have to reference these. These are actors."
I don't know whether that's funny or terrifying.
Well, that's the thing. You know, it's but I've noticed this. They like to compare themselves to the fictional version.
And I understand that you did a video based on the White House Correspondents' Dinner, or that takes place a scene with Julie Louis-Dreyfus and Joe Biden.
That's right. They go. It's like a Ferris Bueller's Day Off, and they go out. They're not going to the Correspondents' Dinner, so the Vice President drives Julie around in his. Corvette.
They ditch the Correspondents' Dinner and go hang out, right?
Yeah, and they go and get.
Is that the premise?
They go and get. And they go and they steal some ice cream in the White House kitchen until Michelle Obama comes in and kicks them out, and then they go to a tattoo joint and get tattooed along with Nancy Pelosi.
She participated too?
Yes. She had a tattoo of Gavel Time and then they ring up John Boehner and ask if he's coming, and he says no, he's got lots of work to do, and we see he's just watching footage of pandas on the National Geographic Channel.
You may be the only person in the last 2 years to get John Boehner and Nancy Pelosi to cooperate on a project.
Well, that's it. I think that video is possibly the biggest breakthrough in bipartisanship in the last 15 years. It hasn't achieved anything, but it's certainly kind of shown that
if
it can be done.
That's the biggest breakthrough. But also in that video, Biden kind of plays, and by the way, folks, we've put a link to it on our website. You can see it right at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. And Biden sort of plays the Joe Biden that the rest of the world, or at least the internet, I think wishes was the real Joe Biden. He drives a convertible. He flashes a smile.
Yeah.
So what kind of direction did you give him?
Oh, I wasn't there for the shoot. It's a fantastic director called Maurice Mirabeau, who has done stuff for HBO. He was there, and it was very, very, you know, you haven't got much time. That's the thing. To get into these places like the Oval Office and, you know, the West Wing, you're not going to be there for hours and hours and hours. You've got 15 minutes. These people don't have very much time. Right. You know, they turn up and... They themselves are very helpful and cooperative, but, you know, there's other stuff to do. In fact, Chris Addison, one of the writers who was out there, was telling me Maurice asked the vice president if he could do one more take. And he said, yeah, sure. He said, you'll know when I've run out of time because a helicopter comes down. And everyone laughed because they thought that was just a joke. But sure enough, 10 minutes later, a helicopter came down.
We're almost out of time with Armando Iannucci, creator of Veep, and Alan Partridge and other stuff. And I just want to play this clip of Malcolm Tucker, the hard-nosed press secretary from your series The Thick of It. This is about 20 seconds.
Come on, Malcolm. He asked me for a personal opinion.
But why didn't you say? I mean, he asked, fuck, of course that explains it. See, if he'd asked you to fucking black up, or to give him your PIN number, or to yourself, would you have done that as well?
I would have blacked up, because it was radio. Nobody would have known.
Very good, yeah.
Minister?
Not the time, love. I'm busy. Fetus boy. Lesson one. I tell you, off, what do you do?
F off.
You'll go far. Well, F off.
Why wasn't I told about this?
Why the F would I tell you about it? I've told you to F off twice and yet you're still here.
You should tell me about it because it's a scheduled media appearance by this department's Secretary of State, so therefore it falls well within my purview.
Within your purview?
Yes.
Where do you think you are? In some f***ing Regency costume drama? This is a government department, not a f***ing Jane f***ing Austen novel.
Malcolm.
Allow me to pop a jaunty little bonnet on your purview and ram it up the s*** with a lubricated horse.
So, Armando Iannucci, you were thoroughly entertained by your own work there.
Well, no, it's just the level of beeping there. It just makes it something else.
Yes. So, and we did that. We chose that clip on purpose. It is, of course, hard to find an FCC-friendly clip of Malcolm Tucker. And if I've got this bit of your bio right, you once wanted to be a priest. So somehow you went from priest wannabe to somebody who can write that kind of foul-mouthed, insult-heavy dialogue. Do you hire writers for their ability to diss for Malcolm Tucker?
Well, it's always great fun. Yeah, there's a whole team of writers. And it's always, when we've done a bit of hard work on the script and the plot and so on, just as a sort of relaxation at the end of the day, we write sweary dialogue for Malcolm Tucker. And similarly for Veep, we write graphic insults for Jonah. That's our little reward we give ourselves at the end of the day.
Yeah, and you get paid for that.
Oh, yeah.
So last thing, I wonder if you've noticed your work having an influence on the real political landscape. Like, there are people in the Obama administration who got their taste of politics from the West Wing and are measuring their real-life high-stakes experience against a fictitious TV show. Do you meet people who say they want to be the Malcolm Tucker or, more recently, the Selena Myers of the real world?
Well, some Malcolm Tucker insults have now made themselves into the political lexicon in the UK. The budget from last year was called an omni-shambles by the leader of the opposition, which was a quote from the thick of it. And also some pieces of legislation that we invented in our shows 5 or 6 years ago have now actually become law.
Really? Like what? You actually have one?
National Spare Room Database. And behavior orders on pets is another one that came in. It's just
what does that mean? Behavior orders on
pets?
Well,
if you have a dog that's very loud, that may have bitten someone, it can have a restraining order slapped on it. So I don't think it's – in the long scheme of things, I don't think it's – we're going to affect the world economy, but
Armando Iannucci, creator of Veep, in its third season and now renewed for a fourth. Congratulations. Thank you very much for joining us. It's been fun.
Pleasure. Thank you very much.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC.